Ready to launch your business? Get started with the commerce platform made for entrepreneurs. Shopify is specially designed to help you start, run, and grow your business with easy customizable themes that let you build your brand. Marketing tools that get your products out there, and that's just the beginning. From startups to scale-ups, online, in person, and on the go, Shopify is made for entrepreneurs like you. Shopify, your all-in-one commerce platform.
Sign up for your $1 a month trial at shopify.com.au/listen.
You're listening to SBS News.
We are deeply alarmed by the escalation in military activities across southern Lebanon and beyond.
We don't need more conferences. We need more combat power.
Putting real money behind a capability that we will put into the hands of the warfighter.
President confirmed that he said you're effing crazy. How did you react to that? What really happened in that call?
Welcome to World News Weekly, where we chew over some of the biggest stories bubbling through the week, for better or worse. I'm Nick Ludlam, International News Editor in Sydney, and with me is our international correspondent Ben Lewis, currently cradling his early morning coffee in London. Hi, Ben.
Morning, Nick. The ongoing strikes in Lebanon and Iran have been doing exactly that, and we will be speaking to Mahram Rabah, assistant professor at the American University of Beirut, about what that means for Lebanon and Hezbollah. We'll also be talking about Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's apparent admission that he aims to control the whole of Gaza.
Yes, and Claudia Farhat is on holiday this week, but before she left, she was in Singapore covering the Shangri-La dialogue, where there were major pronouncements on AUKUS changes, and rather helpfully, she left us her thoughts on that, and US Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth's presence at the event. And, wait for it, Ben, lucky testicles. No, I'm not hopefully going to get a call from HR. That is a real story making waves this week in Italy. So please stick around to the end of the show to find out if they have been scrubbed from history. But first,
this is unacceptable that northern Israel is under heavy bombardment for days on end. Soldiers are wounded, killed, and the Prime Minister of Israel is waiting for approval from Trump to bomb Dahiyeh. We are not a banana republic. We must level Dahiyeh now and not stop until the last building there is brought down.
That was Israeli politician Avigdor Lieberman, who is furious that Benjamin Netanyahu appears to have backed down from plans to increase strikes on Lebanon and Hezbollah's South Beirut stronghold in particular, after a request from the White House. Ben, it seems Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu's bromance, though, is over for the moment, at least. What's behind this latest disagreement?
Yeah, just a little rupture in the relationship. Now, if you take it on face value, the idea is that Donald Trump believes that Israel is responding disproportionately to Hezbollah's attacks into Israel. Look behind the scenes, though, and you realise that it's because Iran has said that if Israeli strikes in Lebanon continue, there'll be no deal with the US. So essentially, Donald Trump's problem is that he thinks that Benjamin Netanyahu is going to mess up this potential deal with Iran. Now, this led to an extraordinary phone conversation reported by the Wall Street Journal and Axios and a few other places, in which, and get the bleeper ready, everyone, this is what Donald Trump apparently said to Benjamin Netanyahu. You're f***ing crazy. You'd be in prison if it weren't for me. I'm saving your ass. Everybody hates you now. Everybody hates Israel because of this.
Great Trump impression there, Ben.
I wasn't going to do the voice. There was too much going on. And then a few hours later, you get Donald Trump's sort of like post-game readout of the call. He described it on Truth Social as a very productive call with Bibi Netanyahu. And he added that there will be no troops going to Beirut, and any troops that are on the way there have already been turned back. Now, this caused a lot of confusion in Israel, of course, because as far as everyone knows, there were no troops going to Beirut. There might have been fighter jets or drones planning to do more strikes. Certainly no troops on the ground. Now, Donald Trump also said that he had a very good call with Hezbollah, and they agreed that all shooting will stop. Let's see how long that lasts, he posed the question. Hopefully it will be for eternity. So there is genuine concern in the White House that Israel could ruin this potential deal with Iran by continuing attacks on Lebanon. Of course, Benjamin Netanyahu would probably like to do that. We know that he doesn't want what he thinks is a watered-down, wishy-washy deal with Tehran. He would like the war to resume. Important to point out that the strikes on southern Lebanon continue despite the fact that this ceasefire, this loose ceasefire, is still in place.
Yeah, now, Netanyahu agreed not to strike southern Beirut, and Hezbollah agreed not to strike northern Israel, apparently. But both sides appear to be going about business as usual elsewhere. It's really interesting, I think, Trump's comments about talking to Hezbollah as well. If he really did speak to Hezbollah, even through intermediaries, it would be the first time for a sitting president. But it's part of that image, I guess, of his unconventional deal maker sort of style, willing to speak to anyone. And it will raise some eyebrows, I imagine, given their terrorist designation. But to Ben, just to get a bit more on that, I spoke earlier to Makram Rabah, assistant professor of history at the American University of Beirut, who's currently in D.C., and started by asking him how likely it would be that Israeli troops would go into Beirut with or without Trump's blessing.
Well, ultimately, I believe that whatever Trump tries to do, the Israelis will ultimately get their way, because this is a full-scale land invasion, which will not end up until the Israelis lay siege on Beirut. This is not the first time they have done so. They had done so back in 1982. Their initial plan was destruction of the military infrastructure of the PLO. Now it's completely different, because the PLO was a foreign entity in Lebanon, but while now they're dealing with Hezbollah, who uses Lebanon and the Shiites as a kind of human shield. The actual mention of troops might indicate that there would have been a kind of commando operation to infiltrate Dahi, but I don't think that Trump was referring to a full-scale military invasion. However, we have information and indicators that the Israeli army are preparing a kind of a full-scale military invasion and ultimately a siege of the city.
Okay, that's not something I was aware of. I mean, although we don't know, these things aren't laid out publicly, obviously.
Definitely.
So look, also, what this phone call, how would you assess the phone call as it's reported, this spat, Trump really losing his rag, as it were, with Netanyahu?
Well,
what does that mean to you?
It is obvious that Trump and the people around him wanted to leak this. I don't believe that it happened under the same factors or circumstances presented by this leak. However, as you know, Trump likes to come out as a strongman, that someone who can bully his way through everything. But at the same time, this should not let us to believe that he can actually force his will on Israel and on Netanyahu. Because ultimately, I think next time around, if Netanyahu wants to carry any operation, he would keep it secret from Trump and from the Americans. The killing of former Secretary General of Hezbollah, for example, was something that the Israelis were planning, and they only informed the Americans a few minutes before they executed it. The problem right now is, as we come closer and closer to the Israeli elections, everyone, including those who oppose the war, will be using the Lebanese war to try to salvage more and more votes, be it Lieberman, Lapid, or any of the so-called moderates in Israel.
And you talked about a full-scale siege. What do you think Israel's ultimate goal is here in Lebanon, assuming it can't actually wipe out Hezbollah, which is obviously its sort of stated aim? Where then do we end up, essentially?
Well, it's very hard to predict what will happen ultimately, but I think the parallel here is that the Israelis would like a repeat of 1982, where the Lebanese ultimately asked Yasser Arafat and the PLO to exit Beirut because they told them, we can no longer sustain you. I think that the Israelis are still hoping, and this is actually a losing bet, that the Lebanese state will actually act against Hezbollah. Part of the reason why they're not acting is fear, but at the same time, there is part of them are complicit with Hezbollah, because at the end of the day, this corrupt system has taken advantage of Hezbollah's weapons throughout the years. What they are hoping is for a kind of a repeat of 1982, or simply a destruction of Lebanon. They don't care, because ultimately, as Lieberman was trying to say, that everything is to be done and carried out to protect the northern territories of Israel. The problem is that disarming Hezbollah is not only a military endeavor. It has to be a political endeavor. And at least I think what's happening in Washington, D.C. at the moment with the diplomatic talks will carry more weight down the road, because as long as Hezbollah can launch one drone against Israel, it means that they are still fighting. And Hezbollah has used this. Hezbollah actually celebrates defeat, because if they're still there to celebrate defeat, it means that they're still alive. And thus, the ultimate aim of the Israelis would have been defeated.
Okay, so where does that leave Lebanon, both politically and socially? Because there's obviously a huge impact on the people, whether they support Hezbollah or not.
Well, I don't think that the support is for Hezbollah. The support is for the sectarian system. And the Shiites are left in the corner of Hezbollah because the Lebanese political establishment has forced them to be, it's like the musical chair. When the music stops, someone has to sit down. So you have to pick your own chair. In this sense, I think that whatever happens, even if the Israelis are to clean house, so to speak, this will not bode well for the Lebanese, because ultimately the Lebanese are responsible for curtailing and for ultimately neutralizing an entity which might be Lebanese, as they claim, but at the same time it carries out Iranian objectives and Iranian expansionist plans. Not to mention that the recent entry of Hezbollah into the war was to avenge the killing of Ali Khamenei, which the Lebanese had no say in to begin with. So ultimately, I do believe that there should be a political confrontation from the Lebanese political establishment and from the anti-Hezbollah crowd to tell them enough is enough. We don't want to be part of a regional war, not the Israeli-Iranian war, and not the American-Iranian war. We have paid enough. Lebanon has, I personally have witnessed 6 wars so far in my life, and if this continues, I might be watching the 7th.
Well, let's hope not. Look, thank you so much for taking the time. I know it's late there. Thank you very much for joining us on the pod, Matt Cranmer.
Thank you, Nicholas. Always a pleasure.
Meanwhile, President Trump says he believes a deal to extend the ceasefire with Iran and to reopen the Strait of Hormuz is achievable over the next week. Feels like we've been here before, Ben. Any chance this is the week a real deal is done?
Yeah, I wouldn't be betting the house on it. We've talked about this in previous weeks, this sort of weekly cycle now of positive vibes coming from the White House and then things not really eventuating. At least Donald Trump's not using the old 2 weeks mantra that he used for his entire first term and much of the first year of his presidency. On Monday, he told CNBC, "I don't care if the talks are over." He said he really doesn't care. And then he thought they started to get very boring, which sometimes with Donald Trump, he says what he actually thinks. And everyone had speculated for a long time that he's bored by the Iran war. Maybe this is evidence that he truly is. With the Trump administration, often from Donald Trump and some of the other senior cabinet figures, you do get a little bit of BS, you know. It's messages they're putting out into the world in the hope that something is going to happen. I always listen to Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State, because occasionally he offers up little kernels of what truth, what's actually going on. He was asked about negotiations in Iran at Congress.
What do you need from them in order to get the Strait reopened? We need the Strait reopened tomorrow.
Well, what needs to happen is very simple. They need to announce that they will no longer fire on commercial ships that are going through or threaten to fire on ships, because in many cases, ships just won't move. They won't go, not because they got fired on, but because of the risk of being fired upon.
Now, the Secretary of State has said that the U.S. has not offered Iran sanctions relief in exchange for reopening the Strait of Hormuz. He says that sanctions relief is going to be tied to Tehran giving up its nuclear program. And where we are at the moment, there is no easy way out of this for Donald Trump. The war, we know, is hugely unpopular in the U.S. The midterms are in November, not that long away, and he owns this war. Re-escalating it is unlikely to improve the poll numbers for Republicans at the moment. And all of that works for Iran. It is an old tactic the Iranians have used in negotiations. They used it back under the Obama-era deal. They take their time. They're in no rush to come to any sort of agreement. The longer it takes, the better the deal will be for them, they believe. At the same time, there is still this blockade of Iranian ports causing economic damage. Might be a case of who blinks first here.
There's been a lot of talk about who blinks first, but and Trump keeps insisting he has all the time in the world, but as you said, he doesn't. And he really doesn't look like he's making any headway, and more looks like he has been royally cornered by Iran, who wins just by surviving, essentially. And in the last day or two, not only have we heard Iran say talks were suspended, they've started strikes again against Gulf states, Ben.
Yeah, which is interesting. There were strikes, just woke up this morning and saw a few missiles fired at American interests in Kuwait and Bahrain. The missiles apparently either missed their targets or were destroyed. But all of this comes at a huge economic cost, not only to the Gulf states who seem to want this over, but also there is a huge amount of American military in the region at the moment. That is expensive. It cannot stay there forever. So I think the closest sign we'll get to whether this really is all over if we start to see some of those assets leaving the region, and so far that hasn't happened yet.
It's worth keeping in mind as well, as the UN mentioned again today, that this ongoing blockage in the Strait of Hormuz is affecting the lives of children around the world who are not getting aid or various things that they need now, and then they reckon that was going to go on for some time. So a worldwide cost.